Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Modern Adventurer podcast. Coming up...
Most of the challenges I do are pretty miserable while I'm doing them, to be honest. It's very rare that I'm having a good time. And if I'm having a good time, it means I'm not pushing hard enough. So, for the most time, it was tough. But actually, doing stuff in Britain is heartwarming. It restores your faith in humanity. You know, everyone's so friendly and... people understand distances. When you say, oh, I'm running from Scarborough to Brighton, people go, whoa, they understand what you mean. And it really engages with people and makes the whole journey quite fun and exciting to do stuff.
I'm John Horsfall, and on this weekly podcast, we talk to adventurers and explorers from around the world who have gone on some incredible adventures in recent years. My hope is that this podcast inspires you to get out and go on your own adventure. But before we start, I am building a community of adventurous people, so it would be great if you signed up to our monthly newsletter at zebraadventures.com, where I'll show you behind the scenes, I do giveaways, and offering you the opportunity to come on an adventure. Now, on with the show. My next guest is a Zimbabwean ultra-endurance athlete who became the first person to cycle, swim, and run the length of Great Britain, from Land's End to John O'Groats. In 2016, he completed the world's longest triathlon, a 4,200-mile journey around the coast of Great Britain. I am delighted to introduce Sean Conway to the show.
Thank you very much, mate. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Well, great to have you on. And I mean, the sort of adventures that you have done over, I mean, the years now counting, absolutely incredible. How did this sort of love of adventure sort of come about?
I've always I had an adventurous sort of side to me, but I kind of buried it in my 20s, not really kind of feeling that it had any purpose or use in my life. I just thought it was a frivolous notion to think adventurously, and it was a kind of waste of time because it was pretty selfish and you know, there's more important things to do, like earn money and buy food and, you know, all those sort of things. So it was always in me, but I never really scratched my adventurous itch until I was 30, really.
So in your 20s, because I read that you sold your business for £1 with the sole purpose of pursuing your passion.
Yeah, so actually you can see it behind me. That framed pound note behind me there on the wall is the Jersey pound note that James Carnegie gave to me when he bought my shares in our company. Well, it's interesting. So it wasn't to pursue a passion. I had no direction. I knew I wanted to go traveling. I always thought photography was going to be that passport to travel for me, but I've fallen out of love with it in my 20s. So I was just thinking outside the box. I just thought, well, how can I go traveling? What can I do that'll allow me to go traveling? And the only thing I could think of was actually if I broke some sort of record in the world of travel, I get some sponsorship maybe. You know, that was it. So I thought of the round the world cycling record, and it was part of the world's ever round the world bike, first ever round the world bike race in 2012. Entered that and then managed to get some funding to pay for flights and you know, food while I was away, and that sort of set me off on this path, really.
Was that when a whole group of people went round and I think he did it in like 82 days or something?
So what back then. So 2012, the record was at the time 127 days just before we started. And most people were kind of trying to do it in sub 100 days. I got run over, so I was out of the race pretty early on. But Mike Hall won that, and I think he did it in 107 days in the end with the new Guinness rules, which mean you can't stop the clock. He actually did it in 90-something, 92, 93 days with the old rules where you could stop the clock. So it was pretty tough race, but it was it's what I needed. You know, I just needed some excitement. I needed to push myself physically and mentally, and that was a pretty in the deep end way to do it. But I'm glad I did it that way. You know,
so you got hit by a car, and then you were like, right, I love this.
Well, no, I was going to come home. Of course, you know, you have a serious accident with a compression fracture in my spine and stuff. But then I thought, you know, no one gets two opportunities to cycle around the world unless you're Mark Beaumont, show off. And I thought, well, this is my chance, you know. I got to carry on and raise money for charity. And that became my new focus. But secretly, you know, the records is what really kind of gets me going.
Nice. And so you sort of started pursuing these passions, and your idea was very much to look at records and just try and break them?
Well, no, initially the idea was to go traveling for a year and get someone else to pay for it, you know, by way of sponsorship through trying to break a record. So that was it. Finished the round the world cycle, got home, tried to get back into everyday employment, you know, went to the job center, signed on the dole, went for interviews, just tried everything for like nearly a year. I was just getting no interviews, nothing, you know. Bearing in mind, I was 31 years old and I have no A levels and I didn't go to university. So it was a tough sell, and, you know, I wouldn't employ me, to be honest. And I had no CV. You know, what have you ever done? I photographed school kids, which was my job before. I was a school portrait photographer. So I eventually thought, after a year, like, well, maybe if I just try and break another record, at least it'll get me out of the house for 6 months. You know, and when I say house, I was living with my mother in a one-bedroom apartment in Cheltenham. So, yeah, so that's when I thought of swimming the length of Britain, just to kind of give me something to do, to be honest.
Good. And how did that go?
Well, the swim was... Well, I mean, in the end it went well because I finished it. But the whole process of swimming 900 miles up the west coast of Britain, half of it in winter, is, I can assure you, not much fun. But, you know, it was the challenge that I'll always look back on and realise that's the one that changed my life, because it just gave me the confidence to go off and pursue other goals. It gave me opportunities to write books, which I absolutely love, which I probably wouldn't have done had I not done that swim, and I wouldn't have realized the joy you get of publishing your own book, you know. In hindsight, you know, I look back now and go, well, actually that was pretty cool.
And so with that swim, that sort of transported you into the sort of world or career, let's say, of adventure. What sort of happened after that? Because you then went on to break a world record in your 4,200-mile triathlon.
Yeah, so, well, after the swim, because I'd cycled Land's End, John O'Groats, and swum it, I decided to do the run, and the run was to do the first ever length of Britain triathlon, which was just a bit of fun, to be honest. You know, it was nothing serious. I just wanted to see what it would be like running 1,000 miles from John O'Groats back down to Land's End. And after that, I really got this bug for sort of doing different disciplines. I wasn't really into... I couldn't choose, basically, whether I wanted to do only swimming, only cycling, or only running. So I liked this idea of doing a long triathlon. And it turns out there's a world record for triathlons. And it was 3,200 miles, maybe. So I just upped that to 4,200 miles, did it around the coast of Britain. And yeah, that took 88, I can't remember now, in the 80s days. Doing a 3,500 mile bike ride, 800 mile run, and then 120 mile swim, which up until a month ago was the longest self-supported swim in history. But yeah, it's just been broken, that record. finally. I can't believe it took so long. And yeah, so that was, that kind of got me into sort of doing multidiscipline stuff, which I really enjoy. I kind of like the challenge of doing different sports, you know.
What were the sort of amazing moments from that trip, did you find?
To be honest, most of the trip, most of the challenges I do are pretty miserable while I'm doing them, to be honest. It's very rare that I'm having a good time. And if I'm having a good time, it means I'm not pushing hard enough. So, yeah, for the most time, it was tough. But actually, doing stuff in Britain is heartwarming. It restores your faith in humanity. You know, everyone's so friendly and people understand distances. When you say, oh, I'm running from Scarborough to Brighton, people go, whoa, they understand what you mean. And it's, it really engages with people and makes the whole journey quite fun and exciting to do stuff in a country where people speak the same language as you and understand everything you're talking about, you know. Because if I said to you, do you know, once I cycled from Townsville in Australia to Mount Isa, you'd go, what? I mean, I have no idea what that means. You know, whereas when you do stuff in Britain, everyone's like, wow, that's cool, you know. So I really had a good time sharing the journeys I've done in the UK, you know.
So I imagine you had a few sort of terrible moments along the way, though, by the sounds of it. Because you grew, yeah, you grew your beard to protect you from jellyfish.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. So way back in 2013, when I swam the length of Britain, after a couple of weeks of getting stung, I obviously started clean shaven because that's what swimmers look like. So I just copied them, you know, like, well, you know. And then I didn't shave for a week and then realized when I would, where I had a bit of stubble, I wasn't getting stung as much. So I just thought, right, that's it. I'm going to grow this anti-jellyfish protection beard. And that's kind of, it kind of stuck ever since. And then I met my wife, and she's, we had this rule from the first day we met. We weren't allowed to Google each other. And actually, we weren't allowed, we only became Facebook friends after we were married, you know. So we'd have no idea about each other's online lives, which was a nice way to do it, you know. So anyway, she's never seen me without a beard, ever. Not in pictures, not in anything. And she likes the beard, so I'm kind of concerned if I get rid of it now, it'll lead to divorce. It's here to stay, I think.
So what were the sort of moments along the way which you probably don't look back in sort of fond memory in terms of what were the sort of lows of that trip, did you find?
Oh, so on the triathlon or the swim?
The triathlon or both.
Yeah, I mean, swimming in British waters, even in the summer, day in and day out, is pretty miserable. You know, on the triathlon, I was sleeping, it was self-supported, so I was sleeping on the beach, getting up at 4 a.m. to catch the tide, putting on a freezing cold wetsuit. You know, that's not much fun. You know, finding places to camp up in Scotland every night, you know, sleeping in drain pipes. And I once slept in an advertising trailer. You know those ones they park on bridges? It was actually a perfect tent. You could crawl in and even fit my bike in. You know, those are sort of the tough day. But it's sort of the, you know, I'm pretty blinkered when I do these records. You know, I'm not looking and smelling the roses. I'm head down. You know, it's physical effort. It's trying to perform at the highest I can for that sort of distance. You know, this is not red line heart rate stuff. This is plodding along, just keeping a tempo, you know, minimizing your rest stops. You know, I'd give myself like 13 minutes to stop and eat food and that sort of thing. And I'd give myself the same sort of time from when my alarm went in the morning to be on the bike or on the trail. A little bit longer to get into my wetsuit every day. But yeah, it's just minimizing time off the bike and off your shoes just to try and get these records. So it's very, you know, very just grind, you know, because to do something for 85 days, it takes a lot of sort of mental effort to keep motivated for that long, you know.
Yeah. And so what actually does sort of motivate you where to keep going when times are sort of tough?
Crossing the finish line, that really helps. You know, I find that trying to get that record is enough of a motivating factor to help me keep going. And also, I'm mostly self-supported. So, you know, if I'm halfway through a record, I might be in the middle of Russia, for example, on my Across Europe cycling record. If I decide to give up, it's not like I just have a camper van magically whisk me away. You know, I'm still stuck in the middle of Russia. You know, so I might as well just carry on cycling. So that's kind of keeps me going, you know, that end goal, really.
And so you do all these sort of self-supported solo expeditions. Why is solo travel important? And why do you like solo travel?
Because I'm intolerable to other people, I think. I'm very focused in the goals I have. And unless you align perfectly with those goals, you find me very annoying, basically. So it's just easier for everyone if I just go off and do it on my own. Yeah, and that's the main reason. And I enjoy my own company. I enjoy the goals and the challenges involved, the solo stuff. And it makes the reward for me at the end, you know, all the more better, even though when I finish these records, I'm often just by myself somewhere in the middle of Russia going, oh, well, I've done it now. Thanks. Right. Now I've got to find a flight home somehow.
Yeah, I was going to say when you said crossing the finishing line, because most of these expeditions that, you know, people and we do, it's very much there's no sort of finishing line. It's sort of, you know, the sort of pub or the post office, which is in the middle of nowhere. And so you sort of cross it. You're like, oh, done that. Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how do I get home? Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. And it's, for me, it's not about having this big sort of hugging, cheering moment with loads of crowds of people. For me, it's just, I had a goal to break a record. I broke the record. Brilliant. Now what's the next one I can go for, you know?
Yeah. So I imagine when you saw, let's say, Ross Edgley swim round the whole of the United Kingdom, you must have thought, poor guy.
Yeah, I was just like, man, you're an idiot. Why go for that? That's such a miserable one. Yeah, no, I was waiting for someone to do that swim. I'm surprised it took so long. It was 5 or 6 years, pretty much, before someone had a crack at that swim. Because it was totally doable. It was totally achievable. You know, just have a bigger support boat, start a month earlier than I did, and you would easy break my record. And that's exactly what he did. He did those two things. So, he's a monster, isn't he?
I know, he certainly has. He's enormous.
Yeah.
And so your sort of plan at the moment with these sort of adventures is to keep pushing yourself, or where is it sort of taking you?
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really thought it through what the long-term goal in my records are going to be, because obviously at some point I'm physically not going to be able to compete. Like in any sport, you get older and you lose the power and you get injured more and things like that. Some things you get better at, like running, ultra running. So I think I'd like to maybe move towards ultra running. I'm turning 40 in April, so I'd like to maybe do a bit more running. But I might start just doing more storytelling rather than breaking records. You know, I really love my writing. I've written six or seven books now. And I love that. I used to be a photographer, so I'm really getting into my filmmaking. So I can see myself doing a little bit more filmmaking things. I really enjoy that. So yeah, I haven't really thought it through. I've had this big project on the go since early 2019. And it's obviously all been delayed and postponed now. So that's my focus, the next big thing, which is top secret, of course. But I think after that, I'll be,
you know, early mid 40s, and we'll see. I'm very, what adventure has taught me is we're a lot more resilient and resourceful than we all give ourselves credit for. So I always kind of just figure something will work out. You know, I'll think of something and then once I think of it, I'm blinkers and I'll just go for it, you know.
So how do you prepare for these sort of expeditions? Is it very much you have the idea and you're like, right, I'm going for it? Or is it a sort of long process of the initial idea and then moving it into reality over the space of a couple of years?
A bit of a mixture, depending on the records, depending on who else is going for the records. So some records, you know, for example, my Across Europe Cycling World Record, I really needed to do that pretty quickly because other people I knew were going for it and the record was just going to get harder and harder and harder. So, you know, those sort of ones you just quickly kind of try and put together in 3 or 4 months, really. Although that record I failed the first time, so the whole process was about a year. But the, you know, certainly pulling it off the ground, I could do now in, yeah, four months probably. But some take longer, you know, some take a lot longer to fund and get funding for them, and logistics and things like that, and fitness, you know, some take just much longer to train for. So it all depends. It all depends. I've got a long list of records and things I want to do, and, you know, some I've probably missed the boat on because I'm maybe a little bit old for them now and I don't have that speed anymore. But some I'm a bit too young for, so I'm going to wait until I'm a bit older. So it's kind of nice having a range of goals and not wanting to do them all right now, you know.
What was the record around Europe? Was it around Europe or across Europe?
So it's there's two cycling records for Europe. There's north to south and east to west, and I was going for the east to west record. So from the edge of Portugal to Ufa in Russia, which is on the Ural Mountains, which is the bit where Russia becomes Asia, from Europe to Asia, you know.
There's a part of the show where we ask the same 5 questions each week. With the first is, on your trips, what's the one gadget or item that you always bring?
The one thing I take on every single trip, and it's even on the small trips where I don't need a lot of tech and a lot of navigation and stuff, is my adventure mascot. He's called the Little Flying Cow. It's a little toy cow I got in a charity shop for £1 back in 2008. And yeah, he's been everywhere with me. So I'll never go anywhere without the Little Flying Cow. And actually, I'm currently doing a challenge called the 496 Challenge, where in January you run 1 kilometer on day one, 2K on day two, 3K on day three, and so on. If you add that all up, you eventually run 496K. And he's on my backpack for each of those runs as well. So yeah, the Little Flying Cow. Check him out on Instagram, at Adventure Mascot. I somehow managed to get that tag back in the day. So check him out.
Have you got him there with you?
I do, actually. I'll see if I can reach over. There we go. As I said, he's on the back of my rucksack for my runs at the moment. So, yeah, there he is.
Amazing. What is your favourite adventure book?
Oh, Shackleton's story, I would say, is probably, you know, one of the ones that you just go, whoa, I mean, just, they had so many things against them. Yeah, I would say any books that document Shackleton's journey is pretty amazing. Another one I really love is a guy called George Mahood. He and his mate decided to try and do Land's End to John O'Groats with no money. Or nothing. They started with no clothes. They just had their boxer shorts down in Land's End, and every single day they would offer to wash dishes in pubs for food and accommodation, and then eventually got given a scooter and then a bicycle. And yeah, it was a really good book. It's called Free Country. George Mahood, Free Country. Check that one out as well.
I think I remember that. That was sort of back 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
That was quite funny. Why are adventures important to you?
Personally, they give me focus, and I need focus. I need big, long-term goals in my life. Otherwise, I get frustrated. And I need variety, which is why I like changing disciplines. So for me, they just give me something to chase. We all need something to chase in life. It's super important. Just find anything, chase it. And honestly, the rewards are so good.
Yeah, the sort of idea of if you don't have a goal, you're just treading water.
Yeah, exactly. But goal is, you know, it's got to be bigger than the word goal, I think. It's too easy to say, oh, just have goals and go for them. But, like, I like the word chase. You got to chase something. You know, you're not just working towards a goal, you're chasing it. Like, really be passionate about it. Be relentless, you know.
Okay. Do you have a favourite quote?
I'm going to arrogantly say one of my own quotes, which is adventure isn't all about climbing mountains and rowing oceans. adventure in its purest form is simply a way of thinking. And for me, I really resonate with that. You know, just if you just think more adventurously, it'll lead to living a more fulfilled life. And that can be just, you know, the food you buy in the supermarket, you know, whatever it is, how you get to work each day. You know, if you add the word adventure in there, you know, be more adventurous, then you just live a more fun existence, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty good. People listening are always keen to travel and go on sort of these big grand adventures. How does one become an adventurer?
I'm not really an adventurer, to be fair. I get classed as one, but actually I'm an ultra endurance athlete. So if you want to become in the sense of an adventurer, so you want to earn money from traveling places, right? So that if you want to become an adventurer, I guess that's the goal, right? You go do things and you somehow get paid for it. You basically got to be a storyteller, I think, foremost. If you want to earn money from adventure stuff, you got to do something that becomes a good story that people want to invest in. And either they want to, when I say invest, they could fund it from a sponsorship point of view. They could buy the book about it at the end, so they're investing something there. They could pay to come and hear you talk. They could download a film you make about it. But that's basically what it boils down to, is becoming a good storyteller. And for me, the records is my angle. You know, you might choose to do history. You might choose to do science. You might choose to do social adventures where you engage more people. Whatever it is. You might choose just to do mountains. You know, whatever it is, have a story and tell it well, and people will be interested in following it.
Okay. That's good. What are you doing now, and how can people follow you?
Right now, as I said earlier, I'm doing a thing called the 496 Challenge, which is, as I said, you run 1K on the 1st of January, 2K on the 2nd of January, and so on. As we speak, it's the 12th of January, so I'm doing 12K today, and it's really ramping up. In fact, the first 12 days is the same mileage as the last 2 days, nearly. So it's really, you know, back ends January, so it's going to be pretty tough that last week, you know. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to it. So yeah, check it out on Instagram, Sean Conway Adventure on Instagram, or check the hashtag when you're out, you're in, or the 496 challenge. That's it's gonna be tough. I've also given myself different challenges within each day. So, you know, like on the 9K, I went and ran a route that made a picture of a running man. So I went and went to a mountain and did this big, long route. And when you looked at it from above, it was a running man. Today, it's called a run and write day. So I've got to run 6K and write something. And then I can only turn back home once I've written this thing. So I'm going to try and write a poem or something about running. So every day is something different, which kind of makes it a little bit more exciting. On one day, I did litter picking, for example, as well. So it's quite a fun challenge, actually. And I can do it during lockdown from home, which is great, you know.
Yeah, I have to say, some of the photography or the places that you run around are truly spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you live in such an amazing place.
Yeah, North Wales. I love North Wales. You know, not only do you have amazing stuff here, you know, you've got mountains, you've got beaches, you're also geographically right in the middle of the UK. I'm not too far into North Wales. I'm near the English border. So getting around, you know, getting to Scotland's not a ball ache. Getting to Cornwall's easy. You've got the peaks just here. You've got Snowdonia, of course. The Lake District's not too far. So actually, geographically, I absolutely love it, you know.
Yeah, it's... what's cool. How do you think... how does it sort of compare with your sort of upbringing in Zimbabwe?
Well, there's less lions around and elephants, so that's a big difference. Oh, it's completely different, you know. I grew up, my father's a rhino conservationist, so I grew up in these big game reserves, chasing elephants out the garden and that sort of thing, living a pretty outdoors life. It's warm all year round, it's really hot all year round, so it's very different. But I like the seasons. you know, I really like winter. I like having a bit of snow once or twice a year. It gets you excited about it. I like, you know, Britain in the summer is amazing. You know, it's absolutely the best island in the world to be in the summer. But then I like the winter. I like making my log fire and, you know, mulled wine at Christmas and things like that. Because in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, Christmas is the middle of summer. So it's a very different experience. So, it's very different. But I do love the UK. It's just that the opportunities here are so much better, you know.
Yeah. And I suppose when COVID's over, Corona, lockdown's finished, what's your big adventure next?
Oh, if only I could tell. I've got a big one coming up. I was meant to be finishing it around about now, but of course it's been postponed, so probably be postponed till next year. That's all I could talk about, unfortunately. But it's big. It's big. It's the biggest thing I've ever done from a time point of view. So, yeah, it's annoying because I've done 2-3 big training blocks for it and then had to postpone. So I guess month of January now, this 496 challenge is my third big training block, which will hopefully be useful for something fitness-based down the line. But for now, it's just a bit of fun, you know.
I guess we'll have to follow you and wait and find out.
Yes, you will.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And it's been an absolute pleasure listening to your stories.
Well, thanks for having me, mate. Yeah, it's always good to share the love and keep adventuring, everyone. Get out there and stay safe, you know.
Yeah, and we'll be following your adventures or whatever this big grand adventure is in the future.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, mate. Nice one.
Cheers. Next time on the Modern Adventurer podcast.
I really had just 3 months there to get my head around some of these issues and what, you know, what is really my passion and what I'm interested in. So in that respect, you know, in that time, I learned very quickly that it is very much all about community-led conservation, in that the whole picture is about people and elephants.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the podcast on YouTube now, and don't forget to sign up for our monthly newsletter at zebraadventures.com. I hope to see you next time for another fascinating tale of adventure. But till then, have a great day and happy adventures.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.